Rahaf Al-Qunun's plight appears to be the direct result of Saudi Arabia's guardianship laws that apply to women from cradle to grave. So what are those laws? The Egyptian-born feminist writer Mona El-Tahawi describes them as gender apartheid. Mona El-Tahawi spoke to me earlier from the United States.
Rahaf's situation is one that intersects through many oppressions that women in Saudi Arabia or women generally in the region would face. One is that she has renounced Islam, and in many Muslim majority countries, that is very dangerous. In my country of birth, Egypt, for example, several atheists who publicly announce on social media that they have renounced Islam have been put on trial. And one of them, especially, I remember because I wrote about him in a New York Times column, was actually put on trial during which his father testified against him. So it is very dangerous. And in some cases, it is life-threatening. And in some cases, people have been killed. But I think that a bigger reason, perhaps, is what the guardianship system does to Saudi women. And I think this is really what Rahaf's case has exposed. Because although the murder of Jamal Khashoggi was horrendous and just full of savagery, even in the aftermath of this horrible murder, we heard very little about what it's like to be a Saudi woman in Saudi Arabia, especially because there are 17 feminists in Saudi prison who clearly show us the dangers of being feminists and women's rights activists.
Let's pull some of that apart then. The guardianship system, describe what that is briefly, because it basically infantilizes women, doesn't it?
Absolutely, Linda. The guardianship system basically renders women and girls from birth to death perpetual minors. And what it actually says is that a woman needs her male guardian's permission. Now, this could be a grown woman, a professor who needs her teenage son's permission if his older male relatives are dead. So basically, a woman requires a male guardian's permission to travel abroad, to get married, or to leave prison. And she will often need a male guardian's permission for work and to receive medical care. But I think what's more insidious is that we must look at the guardianship system as the foundation of patriarchy and a very extreme version of patriarchy in Saudi Arabia. So what you're seeing in Rahaf's case, for example, is that she has said her family has been violent towards her, that she was beaten and that she was locked up in her room simply for cutting her hair. Now, what does a Saudi woman do in that situation under the guardianship system? It's very difficult for her to leave her home. It's very difficult for her to get legal redress. There are some minor protections for women when it comes to domestic violence, and there are some shelters for survivors. But those shelters, they will return women who have been abused to their home if their male guardian signs a statement saying he will not abuse them again. I mean, like, come on. He won't abuse them again. Who's going to believe that?
Saudis in exile, as we saw with the case of Jamal Khashoggi, are at risk. Does this mean that Rahaf Al-Qunun will continue to be at risk, even if, after she deals with the UNHCR and so forth, even if she's offered some sort of asylum somewhere?
Yes, many Saudis, and I've seen them openly express this concern, are very worried about her. And it's not just because she has, for now, gained a reprieve from being deported and forcibly repatriated, but also more troublingly is that her father is a powerful man. It has come to light that he is a governor of a province in Saudi Arabia, which means that he is connected to the highest powers in that kingdom. And that means that he has a lot of muscle behind him. So yes, they can try to find her. So I think the priority right now is to get her asylum somewhere. And then also remember that she might not be safe wherever she is, but let's just get her asylum first.
And so at one point in Saudi Arabia for women, there was a glimmer of hope, you know, women being allowed to drive after the rise of Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince. And yet the very activists who pushed for that decision have now, many of them have ended up in jail. I mean, what are we to make of the prospects for reform of the system that oppresses women in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to be very honest and call it as it is and say that the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, is not a reformer, and he is definitely no emancipator of women. I think that he has unfortunately been able to fool many of Saudi Arabia's Western allies and many of Western media that is just kind of, you know, salivating at wanting to say he's an emancipator. He is not. He is one in a long line of a hereditary absolute monarchy that has used what I call gender apartheid to control women. In the same way that South Africa used racial apartheid, Saudi Arabia uses this guardianship system as a form of gender apartheid. Now, what Mohammed bin Salman, or for short MBS, did was, 6 weeks before he lifted the world's only ban on women's driving, he put in prison, in an unprecedented attack on feminism and women's rights activists, three generations of women's rights activists and feminists who had for decades fought not just against this ban, but against the guardianship system. And it is because the Saudi regime is terrified that the guardianship system could in any way be attacked or called into question by these activists. Now, if you are announcing yourself to the world as an emancipator of women, why are you putting them in prison if they have been fighting for the very thing you're giving them? And the simple answer, honestly, is he wants Saudi Arabians to remember activism does not work. It is what we, the regime, gives you that works. So what that says for the future of activism in Saudi Arabia is that we must pay attention to these activists in prison, because we have heard that they are being tortured. So I'm calling on everyone to look at Saudi Arabia as a kingdom that institutes gender apartheid, and that what Rahaf did is akin to a revolution.
But I guess the question is, Rahaf has very effectively used social media to raise global awareness of her situation and the concerns she has for her safety. How many others might be trying to flee and are not heard? Do you have any way of knowing that?
Well, I personally know several Saudi women in the United States today who are awaiting their asylum papers to come through. And I do know that, according to UN statistics, the number of Saudis generally, men and women, who have applied for asylum since the rise, for lack of a better term, of MBS has exponentially increased. And yes, we don't hear from all of them. And yes, not many of them, unfortunately, are able to get out. But I can tell you that Saudi Arabia is a very connected country online. It's very, very internet connected. And Saudi Twitter, especially women on Twitter, are incredible. They post videos when they want to of their face uncovered as a form of protest and subversion. They share these videos and say, help her. All this takes incredible courage. So to just see Saudi women on Twitter and other forms of social media revealing their face, posting videos about being abused and wanting to run away, communicating with each other and fighting back against the regime is incredible.
Mona El-Tahawi, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Linda.
Egyptian-born feminist writer Mona El-Tahawi.